Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the After Things podcast. I'm Bryce Castillo, filling in for Andrew Main. Of course, we've got Brian Brushwood.
Who's on assignment and dead. And also nice save.
Well, nice save.
I heard you queuing up the W for the weird things and saved it. It became an A for after. That was good.
After things.
Wacky things.
Currently, again, beyond our human realm, in hell, he's completing in hell. The seven trials of Beelzebub, and he's on challenge 3.
Yeah, he'll be back soon. That's Justin Robert.
Also,
Young,
this just in, Beelzebub getting real fed up with the notes on all of his challenges. Andrew's really letting him have it.
Yeah.
You're usually supposed to stew on them for an ungodly amount of time.
Yeah, no, it takes a long time, not because they're a problem, but because he's just giving him a lecture and he's trying to rewrite them.
Hey, can I, before we even begin, give a huge shout out to Joe Diamond. We've talked about Joe's work. Remember, he was the one up in Chicagoland who landed the gig at the haunted house.
Oh, yeah, he's written in.
Yes,
before.
And he submitted a brilliant, clever bit that we put on Scam School. And there was a bit of a hiccup moment when halfway through shooting it, I went back to review the notes and saw him saying, "Yeah, man, I'm really proud of this. Can't wait to hop on a plane, come down and perform it with you guys." And I was like, "Oh, dear." So I definitely called him and I was just like, "Oh my God! Look, if you want, we're halfway through shooting this. I can torpedo all this footage, or whatever." He's like, "No. Just give me credit, and we'll I'll come down and see you guys, in a few weeks." And it was like, "Great! Really, really excited." Yeah. Shout out to Joe Diamond.
JoeDiamondLive.com. So, Justin, it sounded like you had maybe a little bit of fodder for us today on After.
So I had this thing. I went to a wedding over the weekend with old high school friend of mine in Florida, and something happened. I didn't realize that it had happened until after it was done, but this is maybe the first wedding that I've been to that did not have a stated hashtag or some way that people could note that they were at a wedding. And it made me realize why that was kind of important, because it was the one easy way that you could
collect and aggregate
all the Instagram, all the Twitter, all the everything, instead of trying to remember all your friends' social media accounts and then scouring it one by one. This would be one way that they could do it. And so it initially, hashtag old enough to remember when I would go to a wedding and they would have a hashtag and it's like, "Oh my God, what unbearable hipsters." Right. And now it's like, there was one that didn't have one. And I'm like, "Oh my God, why would you not have this easy way to remember all of these things and just do one little download, or just dragging photos off of Twitter.com instead of doing, so much more work, or even worse, letting all these crowdsourced kind of moments sort of pass by and fade into the ether." So it got me thinking, like, with that, and now we're in this, like, delete Facebook kind of phase where – not only is there in general, people online getting upset and saying that we should leave a platform is nothing new. Many would say it's as old as the internet itself. But the idea that maybe publishers are pulling more and more stuff from Facebook and that might affect their advertising and affect that platform just made me think, where are you guys right now at the 2018 audit of what is your social media? What are your social media platforms? How much do you care about them, and what do you use them for, either personally or professionally?
You go first, Brian.
Yeah, this is a really, really good question, and I don't have any kind of smart, holistic, grand theory of the universe to go with it. I just have general vibes, and the general vibes that I've responded to are diversify, diversify, diversify. Don't trust, like, whatever platform you're number one on. Understand, you work for that platform, and that platform can fire you and all of it can go away. That fear, that same fear that drove me from the moment I quit my day job almost 20 years ago, still drives me to this very day. Only it's the idea that as sweet as any one gig can be, it smells awfully close to working for somebody else. And if you work for somebody else, you could be fired. And that terrifies me, especially as over the years I've come to be responsible for more and more people, not just the people that I am creating in my family, but also, you know, people that we're taking on for our business family in, you know, everyone here included. Right. Mm-hmm. With that in mind, it's, I guess the answer is use everything, but understand that you own nothing and always have a escape vessel ready to go if stuff doesn't work out. And the escape vessel.
Okay, so what is just to stop you right here? Yeah. What is your everything and what is your escape vessel right now? If you were to identify like specific platforms.
Okay, yeah, what platforms do you use daily? What platforms do you have just to have? Like from a possession standpoint.
Okay.
What do you use? You have Twitter, of course.
Yeah, but, well, and the of course Twitter was an afterthought. In fact, I believe my first tweet was joining Twitter and feeling dirty. I didn't think there was much to Twitter. I didn't realize how egalitarian it truly was, in that everybody's voice is about equally loud, and that if you garner a lot of followers, then that's usually on the merits of your ability to communicate with other people. As opposed to Facebook, which is more of an autocracy where you buy placement in this oligarchy of distributors. Even on YouTube, the idea of being tied to just one YouTube channel terrified me, because especially in the case of Scam School, like, well, you know, what if I get fired from Scam School and they hire someone else, and now it's an awkward thing where I'm trying to post videos up against the guy who replaced me on there or whatever. And so we launched the Modern Rogue and we launched the Scam Stuff channel. And so I guess total platforms, there are four decent sized YouTube platforms. Scam School is 1.8 million. Modern Rogue is creeping up on 600,000. Scam Stuff is around 60,000. And then my personal channel, Brian Brushwood, is, I think, around 20,000 or something like that. Like, that's about as diversified as I want to get on the YouTube space. Separate from that, Facebook, there's a Modern Rogue channel. There's a Brian Brushwood channel.
There's a Brand Pages.
Yeah, Brand Pages. And then there's my personal channel. But I got to tell you, man, I mainly just hang out on the Modern Rogue channel or Brand Page, because that's where people are most interested. And nowadays, Facebook is charging you for the privilege of reaching your own people. And then finally on Twitter, a lot of time and effort. I'm creeping up on 90,000 tweets as I individually respond to every single person, as I make my vain attempt to go around and shake every hand on the internet, trying to make friends with everyone.
How much of your time on Twitter is responding to people versus creating like new posts? I don't see you post
very often.
Generally very much.
Right. I post once or twice. Today's an outlier in that I've retweeted a bunch of people who've said nice things about the article on the Modern Rogue. But
it's usually I see something general, from you every two or three days, maybe.
Yeah, it's like, well, it's one or two posts per day, and then but a good 10 to 15 responses to people. So like
I would guess by my amateur eye that you used to tweet a lot more, and as your follower count has gone up, you have tweeted less.
Yeah, which is unfortunate because I've instituted a filter. That's what I loved about Twitter early on, is it was the place to just, you know, throw garbage on the wall. Who cares, right? But then once that number gets big enough, it's like, well, you know, everything you post is a reflection on you. And now I've encountered people who have gotten upset because they've misread what I've written, and it's like, I tweeted a thing about how like a bunch of people assume that YouTube is secretly unsubscribing them from channels, and it's like, that makes no sense on the face of it. You don't need to invent a conspiracy theory. There's a lot of very logical reasons why you might think you're subscribed, but you're not. But then like now's the weird part is like the mere fact that there's enough Twitter subscribers, like at 1.8 million. I can't just say that without having somebody figure this is an opportunity to punch upwards. And in this case, there was a comedian who had 100,000 subscribers who was just like, who decided this was his do or die Alamo moment and be like, no, it's a conspiracy. Wake up, sheeple. And it just was so taxing and it took
that
so much of
like
my time.
After you or like quote tweeted you or what?
At me, just saying I'm like, look, people don't remember anything. You know, you think you're subscribed and you keep seeing the videos, so you assume you're subscribed and then you find out you're not, you're embarrassed. So, you know, what do? You blame Google. It's no big mystery. Yeah. And he's just like, oh, so you're saying everybody's a liar. And it's like, well, yes. I mean, they're not lying. They're just mistaken is all, you know, but it became a whole big thing. And so I'm finding myself having to be more cautious, which is a bit of a bummer because I really like Twitter as a free form, social media platform.
But you did grow your Twitter intentionally, right? Like you're growing it for like, if it's becoming a thing where you have to be and this is putting words in your mouth, but if you're feeling stifled by the number of people who are following on Twitter, then what is the goal?
I don't think I'm feeling stifled. I think I am naturally becoming cautious, which is, when you're younger in years and younger in a platform, you can afford to take bigger risks because you have nothing to lose. And the mere fact that what I thought was a fairly uncontroversial claim that, look, YouTube is not secretly unsubscribing you when you're not looking, turns out to be something that would set some significant portion of the audience off. It just sort of has me in a place where it's like, well, I'm just going to be a little safer about what I post.
Also, there. I mean, Twitter is a direct marketing platform now. You know, in your previous incarnation, you were a touring magician
right.
who got booked because you had repeat clients, you had good word of mouth, and you would go to conventions in which you would make new connections to get booked. That is fairly, unless you would do something stupid like hijack their convention hashtag and make a gigantic spectacle of yourself, like there's really very little that Twitter can do that would affect that business model. Now you are primarily in the download my podcast and watch my YouTube,
right?
And buy things from the Modern Rogue, or now that you're doing the Modern Rogue website, here's content, like here's a free way to engage in my stuff. And so I think it's no surprise that now it's like, okay, if I want to say the Wendy's is the best, Burger King's the worst, now am I damaging this direct messaging platform, this direct marketing platform for my own desire? Like, is it worth it for me to tweet that, or should I just text Justin and Bryce, hey, F Burger King?
Yes, right? And that's shockingly close to the exact thought process that goes in, because previously it was not a resource. And at some point, you invest enough time, energy, and effort, and it becomes a legit resource, right? And I guess
you have right now a social media. So talk about escape hatches. So let's say, like, do you have any social media now that you regard as you regarded Twitter 5 years ago?
I do. And it's a total surprise to me, and I'm loving it. And to be honest, I just got back from a 3-hour extravaganza to get my iPhone repaired for one reason. And it's because I discovered I love Patreon Lens. Do you remember me not understanding Snapchat and all that stuff? Like the amount of time, energy, and effort that it takes? Yeah. Turns out all of that, like the idea of working really hard to talk and tell stories and give a performance for something that's just going to get wiped from the record momentarily is not very attractive to me, unless it's to a very select audience of people who are sending me money. In which case, I suddenly deeply want to entertain them, deeply want to share my innermost thoughts, and deeply want to share everything. So right now, and the problem I had is that my front-facing camera, whenever I went into front-facing camera mode, the microphone broke. So because it uses a different microphone in the front versus the back. And so I went and got it fixed today, and all I could think of is like, I can't wait to do more and more of these Patreon Lens things.
Wow. So now that is where things have gotten, where it's like, all right, I can feel comfortable saying something, and even if people don't agree with me, they'll know where my heart is at, and they'll know who I am because they're already there enough to like pony up money to be in the special clubhouse.
But, and also because it's in general a trusted clubhouse, I feel like I could say things that I just can't say anywhere else, you know, that, that I could share things that, that people are going to really grok. I'm really digging that. And it's something that I've lacked for the last couple of years that I'm really excited to get back to.
So I would say Patreon Lens is very one way.
Correct. I kind of like that about it, too, because I can put something out and not feel like every time I post anything on Twitter, I feel like, OK, make sure to clear out 15 minutes to answer the 37 responses you're going to get each one. What's that?
Or just ignore them. If people are being assholes on Twitter, though.
I mean,
I know you have stories of you winning over people being stupid on Twitter.
Right.
But. In the big game, is that there's, energy?
Bryce, you're trying to push a you're gonna Sisyphus yourself if you're trying to tell Brian not to answer every comment and not to have Brian answer every at reply. This is, you know, Brian is the scorpion and you are the frog, and he will answer a YouTube comment in the middle of the river, and you will say why, because all you do is talk about how much YouTube comments torment you, and Brian will say, but it is my nature. That's literally that is just Brian.
And, understand also that in the realm of Twitter is the one domain that I truly can achieve that magical inbox zero. Like, I don't think there's been a single thing I've been sent in the last 5 years that I haven't at least seen, either purposely ignored or purposely or immediately responded to. And but the idea of just putting something out and not reading the comments is very challenging for me, especially in the format where it's so easy to respond. Read
it. I'm just saying ignore more people.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
You count a like as a response?
I do now. Yeah. That has been an evolution of that, where it's like I want to acknowledge, hey, person, I you do you, you know, yeah. High fives.
You want to know what? I'll tell you, I'm actually really I'm glad you said that, Brian, because the Patreon Lens thing does make more sense. Initially, when I saw it, I was just kind of like, whatever. It's Patreon doing a thing that kind of everybody's done, where it's like, here's a way that you can just kind of create more content. But now that you've said that, it really is a great way to up the like, oh, well, I'll never get rid of this Patreon because every once in a while I get random, you know, nuggets of like, oh, this is cool. I like this. Like, this is a nice thing. Like, and it's value add in a very, very, very important kind of place. And I would say, like, for me, I'm going to do this where like, you know, I don't know if you've noticed this, but politics is kind of a crazy thing these days. And a lot of stories kind of happen really quickly and then fade away. Even like I'm doing 3 shows a week. There are things that will happen after I'm done Wednesday and then will be not really even the top story on Friday when I do another thing. My Patreon Lens might be a good way that I can just get that immediate hot take out there.
I use it a lot on the Modern Rogue shoots as well to take photos and videos when we're shooting stuff. In so far as we do take photos and videos of stuff already, and that sometimes ends up on the Discord, but we don't end up doing anything with that. To like, we don't make a post afterward that's like, hey, here's some photos of the thing, you know. So it is a good way to like get immediate stuff out to people that is not 100% important.
Do you guys remember Ning.com, Ning.com? Mm-mm.
I know that name, but I have no idea what they did.
Those are the guys that will create a custom social media platform for you and your tribe. Do you remember Aspill.com built their whole site around Ning? They've been putting on the pressure trying to get us to do stuff for the Modern Rogue, but the problem I have is I know a lot of people who got into Ning. I know none who stayed.
Oh, really?
And so that was sort of it's an unfair proxy, but it's the proxy I'm going to rely on because I'm busy enough that I can't invest the thoughts, you know. Mm-hmm. And I even though yes, by my own logic, Patreon is problematic because that means I work for Patreon, and Patreon can decide, as they have with some other stuff, that we don't approve of what you do and you're cut off and you're out. But in general, I think it's a good enough platform for exposure to new fans. And I don't know. I feel okay about stick it with Patreon.
You know, the other thing is that we're at a point now where we are, and part of the reason why I wanted to bring this up is that we are over the saturation point, even for people that are living and dying with this stuff on social media accounts, where it's like, I mean, look, if I'm at this wedding last night or this weekend, and I'm trying to, you know, get that good wedding social media content, and it's like, okay, so definitely got to post a few things. I got to get at least one thing on Twitter. I should probably get at least one thing on Facebook because I have a lot of friends and family on Facebook and a lot of people that are here, so I'll tag them. I'm definitely going to do for the live kind of content, I'll do Instagram stories because that's something that I've been on more and more. I think it's a better product than Snapchat, but also I don't want to neglect my Snapchat people, so I got to make sure that I log out of that app and then get another thing of the first dance for the Snapchat. We're like over the top, and that's before you get to something like Discord, where you're rewarding kind of your most hardcore fans that are there in these little cubbies. So I don't know if the value of making your own branded social network in an era when we already can do that. You can do the paywall version in Patreon. You can do the free version on Discord or Slack. Like, I mean, what else? What are we lacking for except to say that we own it, which is kind of in even the debate of that is in a different place now because things do live and die so quick. And we know that you can move from one platform to another fairly fast.
I have a Twitter that I think is like my primary account where I just post kind of whatever, but also stuff about the shows.
I saw you. I don't normally see this. I saw you going on a bit of a spree. You pulled a Brian Brushwood pontificating the other day.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Is this about the buffalo wing sauce that wasn't mild?
It was very hot. It was surprisingly hot for mild sauce. I was saying, I'm going to have to pull it up because I don't remember, but I do remember. I think we're in a place now with social media where we already have a lot of options and a lot of competition between Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat and Twitter and Mammoth, this new Mammoth thing, and Vero and Vote and all of these, you know, the idea that we are starved for competition or choice in social media outlets is not necessarily a thing. But when you look at like how Facebook or Twitter sort of came to prominence, it was by overtaking or being cooler than something else, right? Facebook was cooler than MySpace, so everyone left MySpace and went to Facebook. And now where app development and mobile development have ramped up so fast, I think that it becomes less and less likely that we find a new website to shift to in the same way that we shifted from MySpace to Facebook, because all of these, you know, Twitter and Facebook, for example, have the mobile apps, and they're on every platform, and they've got websites and mobile websites and websites for bandwidth restricted developing countries, and Facebook has Instagram and WhatsApp, and you can order food on Facebook, and they're all different avenues to make you say, oh well, I know Facebook is being really awful right now, but I did order ramen through Facebook one time. So,
well, and that inertia is a powerful thing, but it often takes, I don't know, that same inertia didn't seem to stop everybody from leaving MySpace for Facebook, right? Or joining Twitter.
Facebook succeeded because it was where your friends were. And they were increasingly kind of joining, and so therefore you had more social pull into it. And MySpace failed because although it was great for a certain size audience when it's like, oh, okay, I can have my top eight and it's fun and I can post things, and it was kind of like half a blog and half a way to connect with people, it still never really evolved kind of past that. And I think almost really the analogy to MySpace might be Snapchat. Because like they're a platform that had the sauce, but they never really found out a way that Facebook did to make like your wall, right? Or to make everything,
to make it a sticky clubhouse that you like check in and stay at.
They significantly evolved their core product to make it more social because that was where things were going. And both MySpace and you could make the argument that Snapchat now are not doing that, and that's to their detriment.
But I also think even on a convenience level, that when these new social networks come out, they are maybe have a good idea or maybe they look nice, but like Vero. Vero was a thing that came about, what, like 3 or 4 weeks ago?
You're talking about Peach?
No.
No.
Are you sure you're not talking about Peach?
I did use Peach for one week about 2 weeks ago.
Mm.
Man, that was like best time, man. It was a couple years ago when Peach launched. That was Peach weekend. Brian and I were in Oakland. Oh, God. I just whenever I think about Peach, I just think about the Summer Lovin' song from Greece.
I thought you meant the Summer Lovin'
song. Running around.
I thought you meant the Summer Lovin' song from regular show. Summertime, summer lovin', lovin' in the summertime. No. Never mind. All right.
But Vero was like this whole thing of like, oh, you know, we're not going to do ads. We're going to charge people a modest amount. And the first 1 million or 2 million people will never have to pay. And so get in now. But then you go to it and you realize, oh, what Vero is a sharing website. It's not like a posting. What you can't make a text post on Vero. You have to always be linking to something or creating metadata or creating network connections, which is not great when you use Twitter half the time to make butt jokes.
Yeah, you know? And also like Vero made me rank all my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I'm not here for that like hassle. Like if I wanted to have the option to be like, no, this guy less, I want this guy to get less of my stuff. But like I had to go through like every friend and be like, is he your best friend or your co-best friend or a stranger, or is he a frenemy, or is he a mean girl, or is he a jock or a nerd?
And that's the Google Plus thing, right? Google Plus had circles. This had and it's like that barrier to entry now is if you want to get someone over and you want it to be more than just a big one big list of all of the people, how do you onboard someone to say, hey, join this thing and rank all the people that you already knew coming into this new thing now if they decide to come in? Like I think from a convenience factor and a chance to evolve these platforms, that barrier is only going to get higher. As
can I propose where I think this is headed?
Okay.
I think that the reason those features are baked into these attempts is because we have value to the idea of externalizing our internal hierarchy of who's closest to us.
Sure.
We don't like the external experience of pointing and saying, I like you more than you and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. However, mm-hmm. I think we're very rapidly, next 5 years, 7 years, 10 years tops, AIs are in a world where we can now solve CAPTCHAs just by moving like a human with the mouse as we go to select, I'm not a robot. Mm-hmm. I got to imagine that an AI will be able to look and say, hey, you're not saying that you like this person more than that person, but I certainly noticed the way you read this person's tweets over that person's tweets. Here's what, to an outside observer, it appears as though your hierarchy is. If this is wildly out of place, feel free to alter it. But otherwise, this is going to be how I put stuff in front of you.
But I mean, that's Facebook's algorithm.
Are you literally just kind of describing the YouTube algorithm? Because I think that's what they're trying to do.
Yes, I guess I am.
And the other thing is that that is a solution that comes from a company that already has big data on you. You know, if I go to Vero, they don't know who I think about people on Twitter or on Facebook, which is why they have you when you make a friend or a connection or a relation, whatever. They say, hey, is this a good friend, acquaintance, whatever. And I think that becomes another – that would make the barrier to shift to another website that could be totally different, even higher.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think we also see that in the Facebook timeline algorithm, in the Twitter homepage algorithm. Like – that's exactly what they want, and that's what they're doing, is saying, okay, you like these types of things, you like these types of people, so we're just gonna quietly give you this. I think you described something that exists.
Yeah.
Congratulations, you made the Facebook.
I don't know. I think Justin has the right of it in that I was definitely thinking of what ultimately YouTube is doing Facebook has that weird extra factor of just pay to play. Just like, no, just that, give me money and you're everybody's best friend.
Well, but most people here's the difference with Facebook is that right. Facebook realized that, all right, so we have this class of people that have a lot of money. They're publishers, right? And they are the Washington Post and Time and BuzzFeed and yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And so there's some old, some new, but they got budgets. They got budgets to do stuff. There was a competition that Brian and I were having about a gigantic company that was doing branded content. And we were like, okay, so like, you really got to make sure that content's good because that's the way it'll get social traction on Facebook. And they were like, hey, listen, Rube, let me go ahead and pull you inside the tent, dust the chalk off your back and tell you how things really work. We just pay for X amount and Facebook gets it out to Y amount. Mm-hmm. And that is beyond the threshold that we guarantee to these advertisers. So that's literally all we have to do. What Facebook then realized is that why are we drawing a line between people with budgets and you, the person just now starting your business? You should also get used to the idea that it takes X amount of money to get to Y amount of people. And that's where I think that kind of barrier to entry has come up. But beyond that, look, I think that there is right now we are at a point where we are spoiled for choice and we now are more intelligent on what makes us happy and what doesn't. And yes, there might be a day where AI and algorithms can get to the point where it's just a thing that happens in the background and makes our experience better. But right now, what we've seen is that a lot of times, like Vero's main pitch was we're going to give you a chronological feed of stuff. And that's what you're going to get. That's what you'll always get. And we're not going to have to monkey with it to make sure that you see more stuff that we know is sticky or engaging, which oftentimes means anger-inducing or controversial stuff that'll make your mom write a 4,000-word comment. You know, that's what they want to do. And so now I think we are just at this weird crunch point where I think there's a lot of things that are going to come out of it, but we are now – it's not just the early adapters a paradise where there's a large enough chorus of people that are enjoying the product saying – oh, whatever, Luddites, whatever, old man. Like, we like to connect with each other. That's what we do. We're on the net. Puts on striped sunglasses and skateboards away. Now this is so much of a part of our lives where we're making kind of informed choices with these companies that have, by and large, just been able to dictate what the rules of the road are.
Well, and that's one of the things that I've been predicting. I'm not the first, but I think just like we are seeing kind of a backlash against mass marketed, mass produced foods in favor of, you know, organic and perceived as healthier foods. I think our information diet, we're going to start paying to like, hey, don't let me binge on this junk food. You know, will you do me a favor, a random service that I now subscribe to? Will you evaluate how much of this is horse crap? How much of it is clearly, you know, composed of language designed to get a rise out of me, to cause me to waste a bunch of time? And will you cull that from my even viewing so I don't see it? So instead I'm focusing on the important stuff in my life.
I mean, it's kind of even doing that now with YouTube, right? Because sure. Like half the YouTube things say not clickbait on them, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that's like the new title trend is like provocative title, not a lie. that's the new kind of like thing that's there.
When I think you again are seeing stuff with Twitter and Facebook and, you know, giving these algorithmically designed homepages for that exact thing. You know, if you ever, yeah, like I remember when Facebook first, you know, started at like show best posts first or whatever they call it. And it was this big furor of like, you know, hey, I wanted the thing that I signed. I picked the thing. I want the chronological, whatever. But I know when I go to Facebook and I click on, you know, newsfeed, you know, the chronological, it's like, oh, this sucks. The people who post a lot or recently, it's like I think that's something that Facebook,
the odds of you happening to come across their site just after they posted their most important thing, very, very minimal.
Well, and I'm not coming at this from like a brand point. Like Facebook wants you to pay for whatever, but I mean, like, on a person-to-person level, like, the people who post in, I see on chronological versus the algorithmic, for whatever I like of the algorithmic one, it is way better than the chronologic. And I think it's the same thing with YouTube. I think if YouTube didn't have the homepage that shows stuff, I would constantly be going, where are all the videos on YouTube? Because I subscribe to a lot of people on YouTube, but not enough where there's always something new.
I'll tell you what, man. YouTube could care less who you clicked subscribe on. It knows who you like and who you don't like. Like, I still don't think I've bothered to subscribe to that Kurzgott in a nutshell thing, but it's figured out that I certainly love their videos because every new one, it just pops up in my feed.
Oh my God. Is that, and really my relationship with YouTube is just going to the front page of when I'm logged in. And, you know, I think it was Carboni that was joking about it on Twitter that he looked up one video about like how to fix a hinge. And then the next day, his entire front page was just all like he jokingly called them like hingefluencers. Like, so, YouTube algorithm's just like, well, we know that you're really into this hinge thing. Come on, get on board the hinge train, dog.
Which, by the way, that is one of the biggest counter arguments to me explaining, like, look, there's no conspiracy theory. It's just the algorithm. And then people will say, like, oh, if the algorithm's so smart, how come it keeps showing me garbage that I searched for last week or whatever? So it's like, you know, counting the misses and ignoring the hits.
I went and saw that Unsane movie from Steven Soderbergh
the other night.
Was it good? I didn't like it.
Okay.
But I was walking back from the theater and I was like, I was walking out and just kind of hated it. And I was like, do people like this? And so I probably spent that 10 or 15 minute walk just listening to YouTube reviews on the movie. And so now I get like movie reviews in that recommend. And that stuff fleshes out, you know.
Sure.
But it's trying to do what it's built to do, which is to get
you. But also, I think that there is what I think we are seeing in terms of consumer wants is that when you notice the algorithm is not giving you what you have asked it for, or they are pushing those goalposts back, where now it's not just hitting the subscribe button, you also have to ring the bell and, you know, tickle the mouse and find the lost key to make sure that every time a Modern Rogue video comes out, I want to be alerted that it is out, and I want to watch it on my phone if I'm out, and I want to watch it on my desktop if I'm there. Like, that's not – when that doesn't happen or they move that goalpost back, that's where people get upset, is that it's like, well, why are you just feeding – yes, I might – like, sure, you might know my secret shame that I do love to watch pimple popping videos, but I don't subscribe to it for a reason because I don't want to be inundated by it. It was just a phase I was going through last week.
Yeah. Do you have any picks? Any last thoughts or picks?
I don't know that I do have any additional picks. Let's just say my picks is whatever YouTube tells me I should like.
Yeah. YouTube.com.
Here's my pick. Instagram Stories is a better version of the Snapchat idea. And if you liked the idea of Snapchat, but you want to more easily be able to save the things that you shot so you can post them other places, or you want to more easily be able to tag people in things so they will immediately see it. These are things that Instagram has done. They have evolved the Snapchat product to me significantly to the point where I've found myself actually just doing that kind of content far more than I have in a very long time, because I just get more fun engagement. Oh, also you can like see how many people have watched it very easily. There's just a lot of like little things that I think Snapchat kind of thought was part of their secret sauce. And then you realize like, no, it was just kind of an annoying thing that everybody dealt with because people were on that platform. So I like Instagram Stories.
Cool. Yeah, they're nice. They're about as easy to do as Snapchat Stories, but the fact that they can also work into Instagram and you can post stuff between them, that you can save them as like story collections, whatever. Like that's a good use of that. You know?
Yeah.
I have a pick. I spent this weekend relaxing. We didn't have a shoot this weekend, so I could like just sit down and veg out for a day.
Yeah, I'm sorry for that. I meant to have like 12 more things to shoot this weekend. I know I really let you down in that regard.
And so I ended up falling back into a game that I got, I think I got it last year, which is Splatoon 2. This is a shooter from Nintendo. Nintendo made a shooter game.
Splatoon?
Splatoon 2, where it's there's no deathmatch mode. The main mode in the game, it's a 4v4 online shooter, but the main mode, Turf War, is not about which team gets the most kills. It's about which team can spray their color ink on more of the ground at the end of 3 minutes.
Got it.
And so in almost every regard, Splatoon is like totally different from like a Call of Duty or a Battlefield, where it's like they're very unique modes. They're not focused on trying to get headshots or kills or splats, as they call them. But it's more about like, hey, make a character and get outfits and build your outfits. And there's a very like a deep system for taking clothes and upgrading them and play these really short matches. And it's a lot of fun in a way that I don't like shooters and I don't like online multiplayer. And I keep coming back to this.
You know what? You just reminded me that I do have a pick, and it doesn't come out till tomorrow. It'll be on yesterday for many of the people listening to this, mm-hmm. And it's Far Cry 5!
A preemptive pick for Far Cry 5. You haven't played it.
No. I mean, you know what? If I played the last four Far Cry, and diversity of gameplay mechanics, not their strong suit. my guess is Far Cry 5 will be exactly like the previous four Far Cries, and I'm going to love it.
Yeah, I think the embargo for reviews and stuff went up today, and so everyone's putting reviews out. And the thing, in a very Ubisoft open world game tradition, it is very tactily fun to play. Maybe not the most fleshed out story.
Yeah, well, and especially like this one, they apparently deliberately dialed back the first person narrative and made it more open world. Like, you know what? Just it's Montana. Just shoot everyone. Go.
Sure, but yeah, very cool. But yeah, that's tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yeah,
3:27.
Yeah, we're gonna shoot a Rage Select video on Wednesday with both me and Jason Murphy and Jeff Schuessler. Yeah,
wow, yeah, very cool.
Should be fun.
All right, I think that's it. Any last things before we go, guys?
No, it's been some word.
It's hot after. Can we try after? Can you give me an after?
It's been after.
Oh, I like that. That's a good
hat
one.
And how?
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.